Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the ASN podcast. Dan O, the main reason we are here today for episode 55 of the ASN podcast is, what is this, Super Bowl 58?
Super Bowl 58.
Super Bowl 58. The Taylor Swift Bowl is upon us here. We are recording this early, 9:12 at the time of recording on Saturday, the day before the Super Bowl. You know, just wanted to come back on here and get some analysis and really kind of break down the game, the key matchups, all that kind of stuff. But before we drive into all of that, there's one thing I got to ask my good friend Dano, and that's, how have you been, my friend? It's been a while.
Yeah, I've been good. Not a lot to report. It's been what, 3 or so weeks since we've done this?
I'd say so. Yeah, the last time we did was the recap of the wild card weekend.
Yeah. Okay. So it's been a bit. I don't really have a lot to report, but things have been good. I appreciate that it's getting a little bit warmer out, staying light a little bit later. You know, we're taking those steps toward spring. So that's good, because I like the cold weather, but, you know, at some point you like to see some light at the end of the tunnel.
100%. And I don't know by where you are, but in New York, I mean, the last few days have been really nice, but
yeah,
it was like the past 3 weeks before that was just like very dreary and gloomy. And most of the days it looked like we were living in Edinburgh, Scotland over here. I mean, it was like, I said Edinburgh, but you guys know what I meant. It has been very gloomy, but you know, it's a lot nicer now. Yesterday, yeah, I went for a walk for the first time since, like, you know, October, because it was actually warm enough to go for like a decent walk, and I'm going to do it again today. And, you know, so I'm looking forward to all that, the spring activities. One thing I'm not looking forward to, though, is tomorrow is the last game of the NFL season.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bittersweet. I think that we could both agree, and maybe about 90% of the listeners, maybe even more, that this is a rematch that really none of us kind of wanted to see, especially with a team like the Lions making it to the NFC Championship game. We really didn't want to see the San Francisco 49ers. The Chiefs or whatever, I honestly think the Chiefs and the Lions would have been a really intriguing matchup. They played a great game. Wouldn't it have been fitting that the first game of the year turned out to be the last game, yeah, of the year as well? That seems very NFL, very script poetic, you know. But the 49ers and the Chiefs, this is a rematch of what, 3 years ago?
4 years ago.
4 years ago.
Yeah, right before the pandemic began. Maybe it's a sign. Something horrible is about to happen.
Did you see the comparison picture?
Oh, yeah, between 2020 and 2024.
Yes, it was
all the things that are very similar, yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. I mean, yes, a lot of those things are crazy that they're very similar, but like, if you cast a wide enough net and you think about all the things from a day-to-day basis that have probably happened already, you know what I mean? Like, you could probably get a decent-sized list. Like, granted, all those things were basically sports-related. There was a couple political things in there, too. But, like, I'm sure that if we, you know, go to next year and then compare it to 2020, yeah, it could be pretty comparable as well. But, you know, just seeing that graphic, I was like, oh, boy, here we go. What is this disease X that they're all talking about now that's going to hit us? But, yeah, no, it's a rematch that I think not many of us wanted to see. As a football fan, of course I'm still going to watch it, and I'm going to love watching every single minute of it, because at the end of the day, it's still a good matchup. It's not, yeah, a bad matchup. And this, to me, this seems a lot more evenly matched than the first time these two met 4 years ago.
Yeah. I think last time the offenses didn't line up. Yeah, I know the 49ers had a 2010 lead. And at that, you know, when you have a 2010 lead in the fourth quarter, you probably should win no matter what you got.
Well, it's not a 28-3 lead, so.
Yeah, so, well, Kyle Shanahan authored both leads and then both collapses. So, but, you know, obviously our perception of Jimmy Garoppolo was a little bit different at the time.
Still handsome, not as good.
But, you know, say what you will, he hasn't looked as good as Brock Purdy has with the 49ers. Now, he also maybe didn't have the full offensive firepower that Brock Purdy has. He didn't have Trent Williams. He didn't have Christian McCaffrey. But, you know, it feels like the offense is built a little bit more to compete with the Chiefs. You could argue, though, that the defense isn't performing as well. I mean, it's not that it's not as talented, But they've had some issues on the defensive end, so you've got to worry a little bit about how that group is going to hold up against Patrick Mahomes, who's been here before many times now.
Don't you feel like both like units have kind of switched? Where like the Chiefs were looking at like in 2019 or 2020, whatever the matchup was, it was, you know, the Chiefs have this juggernaut of an offense and their defense is kind of whatever. Now it's like, well, the Chiefs still have a good offense, but their defense is really, really good. And then on the flip side with the 49ers, it's like, wow, this offense is full of all pros and this defense really does have quite a few holes in it. Even though they're still good, they do have some holes in it. Like it was definitely exposed during the Detroit game. You know, as long as Detroit kind of, of course, the game plan worked in the first half. So that means that naturally they had to stray away from it in the second half. But, you know, it's funny how like the teams kind of flip flop. But, you know, I think we got to talk a little bit about Brock Purdy and a couple things. Like Brock Purdy to me, maybe this is bold, maybe this isn't, is one of the more polarizing players in the NFL. The reason being is like you talk to one side. Oh, he's a system quarterback that, you know, has a bunch of all pros around him, which, you know, the second part is definitely true. You can't deny that he has a bunch of all pros around him. But at the other side of it, you know, you see the plays that he's able to make, and he's capable of making these big time throws in tight windows. Yeah. You have to think it's just a beautiful combination of, yes, a Kyle Shanahan system is probably the most quarterback friendly system in the entire NFL. Yes, he has Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, Trent Williams. You know, he has a great, pretty good offensive line, Christian McCaffrey as well. That's true. But there's like a beautiful harmony between a little bit of skill and a little bit of skill players. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like he gets way too much, you know, hate on, oh, well, you know, he was Mr. Irrelevant for a reason. I mean, he's still a good player, but then again, if you take him off the 49ers and put him on a team like the Carolina Panthers, what do you get?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like Skylar Thompson was drafted in the same round. I don't think he leads the 49ers to the Super Bowl. You know, exactly. I feel pretty comfortable saying that. You know, it does. You're right. Like most things, you know, most debates, some, you know, there are people on one extreme end and there's people on the other extreme end. And then like almost all of them, the truth is really somewhere in the middle that, you know, it's a combination of, yes, he benefits from what he's got. Any quarterback would in San Francisco. But on the other hand, quarterback is a very hard position to play. It's not easy to just go out there and throw for 33 touchdowns in 16 games. You know, you need something there. And obviously he's playing better, at least within the system, than Jimmy Garoppolo did, than Trey Lance probably ever would have. So there's something there. But what's important here is that he's got to stick to what he does best. He can't try and do too much in the Super Bowl. But I do think that Kyle Shanahan has to unleash him a little more than he unleashed Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah.
Because I think in the first Super Bowl, you know, with the Falcons, when he was the offensive coordinator, the criticism was that he got a little over-aggressive with the lead. You know, he was like, we're going to end this with Matt Ryan's arm. And by doing so, they didn't take time off the clock. And at one point, you know, there was a play, just because I was looking back at this and how it happened, there was a play where, you know, he hit Julio Jones for like 29 yards, and then he decided...
Yeah, that like ridiculous catch on the sideline.
Yeah, and then he said, let's go for him again and try to end this game.
And he got sacked twice.
And he got sacked. And if you would run the ball, you know, even if you... got, if let's say you lost a yard or two, you're still in field goal range. And at that point, you're up two possessions if you make it with 40, you know, four and a half minutes left. And then in the Super Bowl, I think in Super Bowl 54, I think he tried to overcorrect it. You know, the whole game, he kind of was afraid to let Jimmy Garoppolo let it fly. You know, there were some exceptions. I know George Kittle had a play near the end of the first half where he almost put them in field goal range. But I think he was just ruled out of bounds, or you know, something ruled it incomplete. Oh no, I think it was actually a penalty against George Kittle that was a little bit controversial. But aside from that, he really stuck to let Jimmy Garoppolo throw behind the line of scrimmage, or you know, these short checkdowns and run the ball. But the Chiefs, Steve Spagnuolo's defense, had them figured out with running the ball, and so he got a little too. I guess, under-aggressive, a little too conservative with it.
Yeah.
He's got to find the perfect medium. You know, I think this is a game where you have to run the ball heavily, because the Chiefs defense is most vulnerable against the run. The Bills did a really nice job of running the ball well against the Chiefs, and then the Ravens just said, hey, we're not going to try to run the ball for some reason that I will never be able to figure out.
Yeah.
But the 49ers, they have to run the ball frequently. Like, Christian McCaffrey's got to be a huge part of the game plan. At the same time, it can't be all running the ball. You've got to find, you know, use these 2 weeks. I know it's a little too late now, but I hope Kyle Shanahan used this last 2 weeks to find a way to unlock Brock Purdy a little bit without taking too many risks against a really good secondary, which, you know, easier said than done, but he's definitely got to find the perfect medium between letting Brock Purdy throw it a little bit and also not being too, you know, over aggressive with it.
Yeah, I agree with you. One thing that kind of a side note that you talked about that I kind of feel like I have to bring up, because, you know, these assistant coaches often, unless they get head coaching opportunities, often get overshadowed for quite some time. Now, is there a real possibility? Say the Chiefs win. How many rings is that for Spagnuolo now? That's got to be like 5, right?
Well, I know he's got 3. He would have 2 in Kansas City and 1 in... I mean, he'd have 3 in Kansas City, and yeah, he'd have 1 in New York.
Okay, so it would be 4. I thought he was there for both Super Bowl.
He was the Rams head coach.
That's right,
he was just fired as the Rams head coach when he won the second one.
All right, so four Super Bowls as a defensive coordinator.
Before I let you say that, doesn't it feel like the key to like sustaining success is like hire a coordinator who is really bad as a head coach, so nobody will touch him. And then, you know, you just let him go. Like, nobody's hiring Steve Spagnuolo as a head coach because he went 10-38. And so the Chiefs basically have a free pass to, like, having this great defense for however long. Like, what a move there. Jim Schwartz, too. Although Jim Schwartz wasn't terrible as a head coach. But, like, the Browns, you know, nobody's hiring him. Like, the Browns can let him run for 5 years if they want.
I think this is the thing that I kind of brought up a few weeks ago, or maybe even, you know, not a weeks ago, a few episodes ago, where it was like, I just don't get why. Let's take Josh McDaniels for instance. Like, he was terrible in Denver, goes back to New England, wins, I don't know what, say 3 Super Bowls after that, right? And then he gets hired again as a head coach. We already ran through that experiment. Why are we going to do it again? What has changed? So that's what I'm saying. I never understand why these coordinators that were already head coaches get other opportunities. Like, we're not seeing like Steve Wilkes being hot, like, you know, interviewed for head coaching spots. And if he is, they're not serious head coaching spots. You know what I mean? Like, David Culley is another guy that's never going to get another head coaching opportunity again. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if these guys are good in their role, why expand on that? The responsibility for an NFL head coach has to be like tenfold of what a defensive or offensive coordinator is. Not trying to diminish what those guys do, but that's one specific niche of football. Whereas you kind of have to be a football CEO in a weird way as a head coach. You have to make sure everything is, you know, a well-oiled machine, essentially. And, you know, if those guys are good in their role, like you said, like, this is a free pass because this would be Steve Spagnuolo's 4th Super Bowl ring. And when was the last time you ever heard his name thrown into the head coaching ring? So he could just continue to, and that's got to be important too for his mental as well, because instead of focusing on all this other kind of stuff, he's just going to be like, you know what, I'm just going to keep building this defense the way I want to. I'm going to keep adding players the way that, you know, that fit my system. And we're going to build this perfect defense. And I think this is probably the best defense that the Chiefs have had in the Reed Spagnuolo era. This is a fantastic, and you look, and especially the defensive line, besides for Chris Jones, I mean, you know, what do you got? Mike Dana, George Karloftis, Derek Nnadi. Like, you don't have Mike Pennell. You don't have tremendous players. You have good role players that fit perfectly around Chris Jones. Imagine if they can get, you know, another edge or another interior defensive lineman. Like, he's doing a great job with not as much. And you have to think, I think, especially if the Chiefs win, I think that this is probably Chris Jones's last game as a Chief. He would have won a bunch already. Now he wants to make his money, and I honestly would not blame him in the slightest. But, you know, then that creates another big hole, but that's a conversation for another day. But Spagnuolo really just has been able to sink his teeth into this project that was the Kansas City Chiefs defense. And you've seen over the past, 5 years, the transition that they've made. into a legitimate top 10 defense.
Yeah. And it started from year one. I mean, you know, he came in, and I distinctly remember that when they won the first Super Bowl, you know, in 2019, there was like a big switch midseason that like the defense, I don't know, somewhere around week eight, week nine, like flipped the switch and all of a sudden morphed from what it was the year before into, you know, something that was good enough to win a championship. It was a legitimately above average defense over the second half of the year, which, you know, if you remember the defense that Patrick Mahomes had in his first year was a massive, massive improvement. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the job he's done is going to go down in history. I think no matter what, you know, he already has two championships, but, you know, with the Chiefs. But, you know, in 5 years to turn the defense into what he has, while already having a Super Bowl win with the Giants, I mean, he's going to go down as one of the great defensive architects, you know, who also happens to be 10-38 as a head coach. But, you know, when you win as much as you do as a defensive coordinator, I think people forget about it. It was the same situation with Buddy Ryan, who's Rex Ryan's father. I think he was the Eagles head coach for a bit, didn't do anything, but he was the defensive coordinator for the 85 Bears, if I remember correctly. You know, yeah, he gets remembered more as a great defensive coordinator than a head coach that didn't do too much.
I distinctly remember, and I don't know why, but it was when the Jets played the Dallas Cowboys on 9/11 on the Monday night game. What was it?
2011.
I remember that Rex Ryan, as a tribute to his father, I think that was when Buddy Ryan passed away, like 2011. I could be wrong, but I think that's why he came out in the first play of the season in the Bears 46 defense, and they gave up like a 27-yard play to Dez Bryant, and then we never saw that defense ever again after that.
Yeah, just pretend that didn't happen.
It was just so funny. I remember it's like, I think Mike Tirico was like, oh, and the Jets, to honor Buddy Ryan, the Jets come out and, you know, his patented 46 defense, and then you just see, you know,
not everybody on the field.
But no, yeah, I mean, it just, I hate tooting my own horn, but it's kind of, it just seconds what I said a few episodes ago, where it's like, just some guys are just so much better in their niche than they, you know, than being an overall head coach. Like, I'll be honest with you, I still think Todd Bowles, even though he's taken, I don't know about him, but as the head coach, he's taken the Buccaneers back-to-back years to the playoffs. I still think he's a better defensive coach than he is a head coach. Yeah. I mean, we all know, as Jet fans, we know the patented, you know, Todd Bowles time management debacles every single week. You know, those are things you don't have to worry about as a defensive coordinator. You don't have to worry about calling timeouts. But yeah, no, I think that Spagnuolo has to, especially if they win again, you know. And I don't know how old he is. I'm actually going to check, but I don't think he's shown any signs of retirement at all.
I wouldn't. Not if I'm winning like this. I think he's like, what, early 60s?
I'm going to look right now. He's 64, so yeah, he's actually in great shape for 64.
He's the same age as Andy Reid, although Andy Reid turns 65 next month. So as long as Andy Reid's there, I mean, there's no reason for him to...
Why break up the band? I mean, you got Led Zeppelin going on here. There's no reason to break this up.
I think that's why Andy Reid keeps coming back, because it's not like, oh well, I got my wins and I'm gonna go. Like, no, like, you've got Patrick Mahomes, you can just keep going. Like, you have a shot every single year.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think that they bring Bieniemy back after the season, regardless of what happens?
Unless he finds it. Well, you know, I think every offensive coordinator job is filled as of last night. Unless he finds something like at the college level, I don't see why not. You know, apparently nobody's really too interested in him. I've also heard, I mean, it's been publicly reported, and I've heard elsewhere, that the players really did not like him with the Commanders. I mean, there was a report back in August, like in training camp, that his coaching mentality was kind of rubbing guys the wrong way.
Very true.
He was very hard-nosed. And I've also heard that is true. So, you know, obviously the Chiefs are a little more accustomed to his ways. He was only gone a year, so a lot of those guys worked under him. So, yeah, I mean, if you know, they won two Super Bowls with him, and obviously if he was a real problem there, he wouldn't be. I know the latest thing is that he's, you know, helping them out, I guess, for the Super Bowl. I think if they really disliked him, he wouldn't be there. So probably. I mean, I don't know how Matt Nagy feels about that.
I think we could finally shut down the why doesn't Eric Bieniemy get head coaching opportunities?
Yeah. I mean, look, if players don't like him, they don't like him. Like, you know, it's nothing to do with like the race or you know, opportunity. Like, if the players don't like him, it's hard to get a head coaching job. Yeah, all these guys that were hired as head coaches, like, they're very, you could tell they're very well liked. You know, Mike McDonald, everybody seems to like Mike McDonald. Dave Canales, who was the Buccaneers offensive coordinator,
automatically
has anything to say about him.
Automatically becomes the most handsome head coach in the NFL. Automatically. Yeah,
he does.
He looks like Jesse Palmer.
Yeah.
I was watching The Bachelor the other day. Somehow I get roped into watching that, even though I do kind of like it. And Jesse Palmer's role on The Bachelor is actually kind of hilarious. Like, during the rose ceremony, he's nowhere to be found. And then
he just shows up, right?
When there's one rose left, he comes out of nowhere and he just goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, this is the final rose."
It's like,
and then
we just can see it. We can see the one rose right there.
And then just disappears into like oblivion again until after. And the best is they don't show him coming back into the room. So after the last rose is given, he's just there and he goes, "Ladies, I know this is difficult, but I'll give you a few minutes to say your goodbyes."
Can you imagine how much he gets paid for that?
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's just getting paid to be really, really handsome. Because he is. He's tremendously handsome. But,
well, Dave Canales is gonna get paid, one, to be handsome, but two, to fix Bryce Young. So it's a little bit harder.
I love the hire.
Yeah, it's easy to be skeptical of a David Tepper hire. Although he claims he wasn't very involved in this one, which would be a great
thing. God.
I don't know about that. But I also heard, did you hear any, I barely heard it, but I saw a couple clips and quotes from Dan Morgan, who's the new Panthers GM. I don't know if it was the Dave Canales press conference or it was just his, but he was, you know, he used to play in the NFL before my time. He sounds like a football guy. Like, he was like fired up, like really getting the guys fired up about the hire. I was like, maybe they picked the right guy in Carolina. I was a little bit skeptical about hiring in-house. You know, that seemed like a situation where you want to bring in a GM who hasn't been part of that rot in Carolina. Right. But I don't know. He seemed like a real football guy who was like fired up to get things going again. Yeah. You know, Dan Campbell-esque. So maybe they've got a good regime right now with the Panthers.
I'm a big fan of hiring. I love pairing like a young quarterback that's either first year, second year, very early on in his career, with a new head coach, because it seems like they grow together. Like, look at what, now granted, I think D'Amico Ryans before this was already one of the brightest young football minds in the coaching game. And then you paired him with CJ Stroud. You got a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach. And look at what they were able to do together. Like, you could only assume that they're going to keep growing together. And I love that. I think the NFL is kind of sort of transitioning more to that, and also to like younger, brighter minded head coaches. That's not a knock on like any of the older head coaches, but don't you feel like more of the hires nowadays are specified? So like, even we'll take an older guy like Dan Quinn, right? Mm-hmm. That's a defensive minded guy. David Canales, offensive minded guy. Mike McDonald, defensive minded guy. D'Amico Ryans, defense, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to ask what you think about that, because five of the eight that were hired, if you count Antonio Pierce, I know he was there already for a couple months, five of the eight were defensive coaches. Is that like the D'Amico Ryans effect, you think?
I think it has something to do with it. I also think that D'Amico Ryans is an exception to the rule because of, like I said, how smart of a player he was and how good of a defensive coordinator he was. And I kind of think the same thing about Jerod Mayo. We've been saying for the existence of this podcast, whenever we talked about the heir to the New England Patriots throne, Jerod Mayo was the guy that we were talking about, because for years we've been hearing this guy is a tremendous football mind. And I think I love the former player hire, because I think, one, they know exactly what it takes to succeed in the NFL. Like, look at Jerod Mayo, he's a Super Bowl winning linebacker. Like, he knows exactly what it takes to win in the NFL. That's number one. Two, it's a testament to how smart these guys are. And you see it. They're, most of the hires, it seems like, are more linebacker type of guys. And those are the quarterbacks of the defense. Right. you know, those are the defensive minds of the defense itself. So, you know, I definitely think D'Amico Ryan's hiring has to do with a lot of these younger defensive minded guys getting hired, for sure. Yeah. I mean, look at what he was. It's proof is in the pudding. I mean, he went, I thought that Houston at best was going to look really good, but have growing pains and go like 6-11.
Right. Yeah. They won a playoff game. I thought so too. That's right. Like, you know, CJ Stroud gets a lot of credit, as he should. One of the best rookie seasons by a quarterback we've seen. But the defense took a big step forward under D'Amico Ryans. You know, he's their defensive play caller, while also being a head coach at, you know, what, 40 years old, 39, whatever it is. And the defense really took a big step forward. You know, Derek Stingley had a great year. Christian Harris looks like a big future piece there. You know, Jonathan Greenard had his best year of his career. Like, you know, he did, D'Amico Ryans came in and did a really good job. I think the Seahawks are expecting the same thing with Mike McDonald, thinking, you know, well, we've got the pieces.
They have the pieces.
Like, you know, we feel that we are built, you know, especially with the secondary. And he, you know, if he comes in and just, you know, energizes that group and gets them playing the way they should be, that's instantly going to transform the team. And, you know, all of a sudden, the offense isn't as gigantic of a priority. You know, if he can get that group going, of course, the offense matters. But, you know, they feel like, they probably feel like he can step in and from day one lead to some improvement. You know, hiring a lot of these five defensive coaches, it's created a lot of interesting offensive coordinator hires, too, that you usually don't see. Because usually when, you know, when an offensive-minded head coach is hired, they are the play caller. But this year we've had to see teams, you know, fill some really important offensive coordinator roles. So, you know, there's Cliff Kingsbury. If we look at those five teams, a lot of interesting ones. Cliff Kingsbury with the Commanders, which I don't think is actually that bad.
No, I think it's a great hire.
Yeah, especially Luke Getsy with the Raiders is a little rough.
I don't know about that, but
Getsy,
to be the devil's advocate here, I know like the Bears offense didn't look great, but if you actually look at the Bears offense in a nutshell, Getsy actually produced some really good looking passing plays. And, you know, not a knock on Justin Fields, but like, you know, sometimes he wasn't able to, you know, execute that passing play. Yeah, but
like, we'd be hypocritical if we came out here and blamed him, because we always blame Justin Fields. So, you know,
yes, that's right.
So it can't be everybody's fault. There's got to be a little bit on Fields for sure.
A little bit for sure. No, I mean, it is like, you know, but I think with a better quarterback, I mean, you have the pieces offensively in Las Vegas. So if they can get, you know, a quarterback, like, I do not think that Aiden O'Connell is the answer. Raiders fans will debate me on that to the day that they die, but
are they really Raiders fans that are convinced he's the answer?
100%. Like, I posted my Raiders 7-round mock draft on YouTube, and I traded up to number 4 to get Jaden Daniels. And they were like, no, this is crazy. Like, keep the picks. Aiden O'Connell, you know, is more than serviceable. My thing is, and we've talked about this before, why are people so content with mediocrity?
Like, if I'm Antonio Pierce, like, I'm not hitching my job to Aiden O'Connell. I know he's not the GM, but he's got to say.
I don't get when people are like, why are we going to get this guy? We have this guy right now. That's okay. Okay, would you rather have the guy that's okay, or would you rather have the guy that's potentially a franchise quarterback? Quarterback is the most important position in football, so I don't think you should be settling for mediocrity if you have the opportunity to get someone that's much better. Yeah, that's just my opinion. And it goes for everything, too. Someone said, I forget, oh, it was the Tennessee Titans. I think I had like Graham Barton. I picked Graham Barton for them. And they were like, well, why would we get someone that can play, you know, all over the offensive line when we have serviceable pieces? I'm like, did you read what you wrote? Like, what is that? How does that even make sense? Like, you have someone that could legitimately play all five positions very well.
Serviceable, like, pieces, by the way, a very generous description of that.
Serviceable pieces to me means a backup player that could start in a pinch.
Yeah.
Like, people are just so content with mediocrity. I don't understand it. And whatever. That's again, another conversation for another day. But
I mean, I see it when I do the power rankings every year. You know, the way people prop it. I guess it's a product of the offseason being so long, too, that eventually you just become like a little bit delusional and you start propping up these mediocre players in your head. But yeah, like, you know, fans get like attached to guys that do not raise a team's ceiling at all. You know, and I wonder, like, if Aiden O'Connell's your quarterback, like, what do you think you're doing in the AFC West? Not, let alone the AFC, where, like, you have, you know, 8, 9, 10 great quarterbacks. But, like, you know, you're in a division with Jim Harbaugh, you know, Jim Harbaugh, Justin Herbert, and then Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, and then, you know, God knows who Sean Payton brings in. Is probably better than Aiden O'Connell. You know, what are you doing other than going 5-12?
Yeah, I don't get it, especially since, like, the defense did basically a complete 180 after Antonio Pierce was hired, too. It's like,
yeah,
well, you got Pierce. The defensive players believe in Antonio Pierce, and clearly it shows on the field. So why not build up the other side of the ball that in a game on Christmas Day wasn't able to complete a pass after the first quarter?
Yeah, that would be helpful.
How about that?
I think they don't have to pay, you know, like they don't have to pay Josh Jacobs. Samir White looked really good. And, you know, he's a running back. The running backs, you know, are as valuable. Direct that money somewhere else on the offense. And, you know, I don't whether that's a quarterback or whether you can add to the offensive line. Yeah, I think you've got to focus on the offense, because you can't expect to go out there and, you know, win in Arrowhead Stadium completing 8 passes just because, you know, everybody's inspired to play for Antonio Pierce. Like, you know, you've got to tighten up ahead of what's going to be a really tough year between, you know, facing the rest of the AFC West and then facing those AFC quarterbacks. I don't think Aiden O'Connell gets it done.
Let me ask you a question. You mentioned Jim Harbaugh and Justin Herbert, and then, of course, they hired Greg Roman as their offensive coordinator. Because they have to go after – what a Greg Roman offense, you have to go after a running back. So a lot of people say Saquon, but I would be willing to hitch my wagon to Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, I mean, in that kind of offense, that could work. I it's funny. One of the sad things about this past year is that their offensive line actually stayed pretty healthy. You know, like the rest of the team fell apart, as it usually does.
Yeah.
In LA, but, like, you know, the offensive line stayed pretty healthy. And Austin Eckler still couldn't really do anything. So they've got to move on from him, you know, as soon as they can. But Josh Jacobs would be nice. I mean, look, I'm a little scared of what a Greg Roman offense looks like with Justin Herbert, because I don't, you know, I hope he actually, like, leans into Justin Herbert's strengths and doesn't try to turn it into a fully run-based offense. You know, you can utilize the run without it depending on the run.
Just as I traded for Justin Herbert in Dynasty, yeah, this is a devastating hire.
Hopefully Jim Harbaugh is a championship winning coach. Hopefully he's smart enough to say, hey, you know, we're going to run through Justin Herbert's strengths. Like, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to put it all on whoever our running back is. But, you know, the Greg Roman hire is not one that inspires a lot of people. But I think it would be helpful, though, to have an upgrade at running back. I mean, you have to have a better running game than you had last year. Josh, you know, with the offensive line you have, which is not bad, you know, and the fact that Greg Roman knows how to take advantage of the running game, I think that expands your options. You know, there's a lot of guys that can thrive in that offense. Josh Jacobs would be one of them. You know, I don't know how much you're willing, you know, they have some cap issues, so I don't know how much you're willing to spend on a running back, but they're going to have to do something, because I don't think, you know, Austin Eckler is not the guy. He's not coming back. And then everybody else on the roster, I would not run with, you know, like Joshua Kelly should not be the number one running back in LA. So they're going to have to look around and find somebody.
Yeah, I just thought that was, like, an interesting thing, because you mentioned that you didn't think that the Raiders are going to pay Josh Jacobs, but
yeah,
there is someone that will. I mean, and all signs are leading to the Chargers landing either, you know, or hey, maybe even Derrick Henry, who knows? But yeah. I wouldn't. But anyway,
there's going to be a lot of running backs out there. I mean,
yep.
Between Henry and Jacobs and Saquon, you know, the veterans are out there. I don't really know who else is a free agent, but whoever they are, they're not going to get paid very much, because that's the way it goes in the NFL.
Yeah, well, look at Miles Sanders, just another contract to pile on top of the bad running back mm-hmm. contracts in the NFL. But getting more towards the big game tomorrow for the Super Bowl here, I wanted to get a couple things from you here. I wanted to get, first off, what you think the final score will be, or who wins the final score, the Super Bowl MVP, and maybe a player that doesn't win Super Bowl MVP, but plays a really big part.
Yeah. So I picked the Eagles last year. I think I learned my lesson on, you know, about Patrick Mahomes on this stage. I mean, it's like, look, the Bills probably should have won in Buffalo. The Ravens probably should have won in Baltimore. This almost seems like it's a little bit easier for Patrick Mahomes. And that, you know, that may be, I may be proven wrong on that. But I'm concerned, if there's one concern I have for between both teams, it's the 49ers defense and their slow starts. You know, the pass defense is a little bit concerning to begin with. Travarius Ward is very good. Aside from that, you know, it gets a little bit sketchy in the secondary, especially without Hufanga at safety. I'm a little bit concerned about that pass defense. Actually, in fact, I'm a lot of bit concerned against Patrick Mahomes. And I know the Chiefs' passing offense hasn't been terrific, but he seems like he's really leaning into Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce, and that's it. Like, you know, sticking with what works. And sure enough, it's working. So I'm definitely a little bit concerned about the 49ers defense, the pass defense against Mahomes, especially early in the game. You know, Steve Wilks did a good job of adjusting in-game against the Packers and against the Lions. It was a completely different defense in the second half. But they were able to overcome those deficits. If you fall into a hole against the Chiefs, I don't think Steve Spagnuolo is going to let you come back. Like, it's just not the same as going up against the Lions, you know, mm-hmm. secondary or Joe Barry's defense in Green Bay.
Hey.
If you, yeah, no, it's sorry, but it's true. If you go up, you know, if you go down 11, 14, 17 in the first half against the Chiefs, you know, knowing the way that Steve Spagnuolo's defense can also adjust and clamp down on teams in the second half, I don't think you come back. Now, if, I know really this could be true for any game with any team, but if the 49ers get out to a lead and can control it, now you're set up really well. You know, because the Chiefs defense is definitely vulnerable against the run. So if you get a lead, although the Eagles had one last year and it didn't work out, if you get a lead, you know, a good solid 7 to 10 point lead, and you can run the ball effectively, like, you're set. I really do think that they're much better off this year than they were 4 years ago with a lead because of Christian McCaffrey and because the Chiefs defense is not as strong against the run. I really do think that they can take control of the game. It's also worth noting that, you know, you don't want to doubt Patrick Mahomes, but he really has not, the offense has not been good in the second half this year. Like, even in games they've won last week, not good in the second half. Andy mm-hmm. Reid got very conservative with it. It didn't work out. You know, they, like, when they beat the Dolphins or in Germany, no points in the second half. When they beat the Chargers the first time, no points in the second half. And they lost to the Eagles, no points in the second half. So, you know, if the 49ers get out to the lead, I feel good about the way that they can control the game going into the second half. But from what we've seen from the 49ers secondary, I'm not sure they're going to be very well prepared for the Chiefs coming out. You know, it's almost like the perfect storm of, like, this defense has struggled early in games, and the Chiefs offense just happens to have, you know, I think they've scored on 8 consecutive opening drives in the playoffs. Like, they know how to strike early, and the 49ers have a hard time, you know, being prepared for opposing offenses. And that's a game that I don't want to say could get away from the 49ers, but I have a hard time seeing how they could really catch up. So I'm going to go with the Chiefs. Maybe I'm going to do a reverse jinx here, and, you know, we'll get a 49ers win. I'm going to say 31-24, because I do think that – I don't think the 49ers, they're too good to get completely shut down
yeah.
by the Chiefs defense. They, you know, even if Brock Purdy is, like, a little bit intimidated by the spotlight, which I don't really think he will be, I think if he struggles, it would just be more of a product of the Chiefs defense being that good. You know, but even if he's a little bit – you know, intimidated by the lights of Super Bowl 58. I think there's just too many weapons on the offense to not put something together. Also, you have Kyle Shanahan, who's great at scripting drives. So I think they're going to score some points, but I am concerned. You know, I think all of the pressure is on Steve Wilks to avoid what happened the last 2 weeks, where his defense came out looking a little bit yeah. unprepared. Can't let that happen. You've got 2 weeks to prepare here. You know, you better have cooked up something good against this Chiefs offense. So I'm going to go with the Chiefs 31-24. I think you would also ask for MVP and then unheralded players. So I'm going to give you that. MVP, they always give it to Patrick Mahomes, even when he doesn't serve it. I'm just going to go with Brady too. Yeah, no, it's exactly. Like James White had a case to be MVP with Brady. Devin White with the Buccaneers had probably the best case that year. I'm just going to say Patrick Mahomes, just because I think that's what they do. You know, who could make the biggest impact? I think Legarius Sneed. You know, it's hard because the 49ers don't just have one guy that the Chiefs secondary can focus on. Like, they've got to focus on a lot of different guys. But, you know, if they were handing out I don't even know if they do an AFC Championship MVP. The real one should be or should have been probably Legarius Sneed. He was really good in that game, you know, aside from the one play where Zay Flowers, you know, had the taunting call. But Legarius Sneed has turned into a top five corner in the league this year. I think he's going to be a huge piece of that defense. You know, Willie Gay, too, he's back. He didn't play against the Ravens. It didn't matter because they said, well, we're not going to run the ball anyway, even though it's what we do best. But, you know, Willie Gay is going to be really important against this running game. I know they don't have to worry about a mobile quarterback this time for the most part, but he's going to be important now that he's healthy against this running game and Charles Omenihu is out up front. So, you know, those are two guys who can make an impact. Obviously, I don't think this is unheralded, but I think Rashee Rice is gonna be a guy that Patrick Mahomes goes to early and often. So I think that, you know, if the casual fan is only watching the Super Bowl and nothing else, I think they're going to be awakened to Rashee Rice and how good he is. On the 49ers side, even though I don't have them winning, you know, Fred Warner had a big game in Super Bowl 54. He had a big interception of Patrick Mahomes. I think he's going to have to do a great job as the quarterback of the defense again, you know, for them to hold up against the Chiefs and especially their running game, you know, with Patrick Mahomes scrambling all over the place and Isaiah Pacheco taking off. You know, I think the middle of that defense is going to have a big game. And I wouldn't be surprised if Fred Warner has a big one, similar to the way, I know he's not a safety, but Kyle Hamilton was kind of all over the field against the Chiefs, and it kept the Ravens in that game. I think Fred Warner is going to have to be all over the field to keep them in that game.
Very well said, my friend.
That was a lot, we've sat on this for like 13 days, so those are my all the thoughts I've compiled about this game.
This is what we do over here at the ASN podcast. We analyze and we go in depth with the analysis. So
it is. I've been thinking about this game for a while. So
clearly,
that's what I got, but I want to hear from you.
Yeah, so I'm kind of sort of in the same boat as you. Maybe, I mean, we're really splitting hairs here, but maybe not as many points being scored. I'm going to say 27-23, Kansas City. The thing that we really learned last year was you cannot go tit for tat with the Kansas City Chiefs in playoff pressure situations. They're always going to find a way to score on you. And I think the Eagles kind of found that out last year where it was like, well, if we just keep scoring, we'll stop them eventually. Right. And they never did.
Because that's what they did. Honestly, that's what they did in the first Super Bowl against the Patriots. Well, the last Super Bowl before this one. They literally scored every time. And they're like, one of these times we'll stop them. And they did at the end.
Yeah. I think the San Francisco 49ers know that. The San Francisco 49ers, in my opinion, also have a better defense than the Eagles did anyway. But I think there's a couple matchups to really watch here. And for me, it's both the tight ends. The reason being is who exactly is going to line up against Travis Kelce? Who exactly is going to line up against George Kittle? For me, I think the Chiefs have the advantage over the 49ers in terms of matchups because there's a lot of different ways that they can go with a matchup on George Kittle. You know, you could look at you can go as far as Shamari Connor. You can go Trent McDuffie in the slot as well. You can go Willie Gay. You can go Nick Bolton. There's a lot of different ways that they can go. Hell, they could even line up Legarius Sneed against him if they want to. There's a lot of different ways that they can go. And I have to think on the other side for the 49ers, it's either going to be Jair Brown or Fred Warner, or maybe even Dre Greenlaw. You know what I mean? There's not as many options on that side of the field. So I think it really comes down to which team, because both tight ends are big parts of the offense. We could both, I mean, maybe not as much George Kittle, obviously. I mean, there are some games where George Kittle is the offense, but there are some games where he has one catch for 10 yards and the 49ers score 41 points. You know, he is not as focal of a point as Travis Kelce is for the Kansas City Chiefs. But I think it comes down to which team kind of neutralizes the tight end best. I think both tight ends are going to have a pretty decent game, honestly. But I think it comes down to who holds them the best in, you know, in the spots that actually matter the most. Another big thing for me is Joe Tooney is out for the Kansas City Chiefs. Yeah. He's not playing as well. So I look to see Eric Armstead having a pretty big game on the inside, or even Javon Hargrave as well. I think whoever comes in is going to have an enormous amount of pressure. We're probably going to see a lot of double teams. I'd like to think that Creed Humphrey is probably going to slide over and help whoever starts at left guard. And then Trey Smith is going to have to be left on an island, which he's more than capable of doing himself. So I don't think we have to worry about that. But the interior pressure is something that I think we're going to have to look for the San Francisco 49ers. It's key to kind of just maybe shoot the gaps, maybe shoot the B gaps a little bit with Fred Warner, with Dre Greenlaw, guys like that, Oren Burks. You need to get some pressure on Patrick Mahomes up the middle. That's also where Isaiah Pacheco comes into play as well, because Pacheco is a good hard-nosed runner through the tackles and up the middle. So they often say, which I think is crazy, but if you run up the middle on, you know, a double A gap or a B gap blitz, it usually works out in your favor. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Chiefs kind of counteract that pressure coming up the middle, because you have to think that Steve Wilks is going to dial up some pressure coming up the middle, especially with a backup guard in there. That's going to be interesting to watch as well. In terms of who I think is going to win Super Bowl MVP, you know me, I always go very random just because of that one chance that I actually, like, you know, get it right. I don't think I'm going to get it right, but I'm going to say that Chris Jones is going to win MVP. I think that he's going to have a monumental role to play in the pressure of that team. I say that he goes, this is me. Now, I like to randomly predict the stat lines. I say he goes for 2.5 sacks, 4 tackles for a loss, and a crucial forced fumble.
Yeah, you would think that would be enough for Super Bowl MVP, even with Patrick Mahomes there and Travis Kelce.
I think so.
He'd get my vote there.
And you know, we've seen it in years past in defensive battles. Von Miller, you know, had a really big game against the Carolina Panthers. He won Super Bowl MVP. But I think that we're going to get an unsung hero there. Or, I mean, Chris Jones isn't really an unsung hero, but an unlikely MVP candidate. And I think that on the maybe unsung hero side, I do think that it depends for me, because I obviously we have to see how the game goes. But I think that the unsung hero is going to kind of be Creed Humphrey, because if they're able to counteract the pressure up the middle that Javon Hargrave and Eric Armstead are going to be bringing with a backup guard, you kind of have to see. That's like, Humphrey is that guy that we've seen blocking two guys at the same time. He's just like a different beast. So I think he'll be an unsung hero. The whole offensive line in general, every single game is always an unsung hero for any team. No one really kind of deep dives into the offensive line. But I think the offensive line as a whole, kind of, you know, keeping the pressure to a minimum on Patrick Mahomes, because we've seen it time and time again. I mean, even with pressure in his face, to be honest with you, he's actually statistically like the best quarterback in NFL history with pressure.
Yeah, it almost feels like it doesn't matter. I mean, we know it does, but yeah, he, you know, his scrambling ability is part of that too, that he will, it's not just for a few yards. Like, he'll go for 17 yards when you think you've sacked him.
He'll go for 17 yards and then he'll scurry out of bounds, which is the best. He'll break your back with a run and then he won't even get touched, which is the best part about it. But we've seen in Super Bowls past that pressure has gotten to Patrick Mahomes. You think of the Tampa Bay game where he got just absolutely decimated. He got hit 8, 9, 10 times. So I think if you can put continued pressure on Patrick Mahomes, because, you know, it's all fine and dandy if you get pressured once every 10 dropbacks, like, oh yeah, I could deal with this. But if you're getting consistent pressure and he's getting pressured, you know, every other snap, something like that, every other dropback, I think that's going to be big. So I think the way that the offensive line plays with a backup guard is going to be very imperative to how the Kansas City Chiefs play.
Definitely. And I really thought the Ravens would have a huge advantage there with Matabuki. Yeah. You know, on the interior, and no Joe Tooney, and they couldn't really take advantage of it aside from one or two plays. But the 49ers, you know, they've got an extra week to prepare. They also have a very talented interior defensive line. They've got Javon Hargrave and Arik Armstead in there. So, you know, I mean, that's going to be key, because if they can take advantage of that, it's somewhere where the Ravens didn't really succeed. But It's true. Like Patrick Mahomes, like, you know, like Tom Brady, like every quarterback would rather have a clean pocket than be under pressure.
Yeah.
But Tom Brady, like, especially, like, if you got him under pressure, you got him. Like, you know, we know he wasn't taking off and running for the most part. Like, he was decisively worse under pressure. Like, that's what the Giants, what Steve Spagnuolo did against, you know, as the Giants defensive coordinator. You know, it's what teams do. The Eagles have finally got to him at the end of that Super Bowl because of pressure. Like, Tom Brady was a little bit susceptible to pressure. And with Patrick Mahomes, it feels like, you know, that it's almost like he's going to outsmart you every time, you know, you have that opportunity. So it's something that Steve Wilks is, I don't want to say he's going to have to prepare for, because we're already at Super Bowl weekend. But, you know, you hope that he's able to dial up consistent pressure, you know, and something that can actually keep Patrick Mahomes on his toes instead of just, like you said, the occasional, you know, every 10 plays getting him a little bit uncomfortable. But it's going to be interesting. Also, you know, I mentioned how in the playoffs, it's mostly been, you know, if you look at week one against the Lions, like Patrick Mahomes targeted like 11 different guys. I know Travis Kelce wasn't there, but like they spent a good portion of the season trying to figure out who are the receivers we can trust and who are the ones we can't. It really ended up being like two receivers. And I think Marquez Valdes-Scantling is kind of back in the circle of trust right now too. But it'll be interesting. You know, they focus so heavily on Travis Kelce, Rashee Rice in the playoffs. Can the 49ers find a way to take one of them out of the game?
Yeah.
Or at least really limit one of their impacts. It's probably not going to be Kelce. But, you know, Rashee Rice is a rookie. You know, is there a way that you can figure out, you can do what other defenses have not been able to do and say, you know, we're going to cover him really well. We're going to wrap him up. We're going to force Mahomes to either go to Kelce or to Marquez Valdes-Scantling or, you know, Richie James or somebody else who's not trustworthy. But, you know, if you let Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce run all over the field, like the Chiefs have proven they can win with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's in one sense, it's easier that the Chiefs don't have a billion weapons. And, you know, they've really focused on two guys. And so, you know, you as a defense can hone in on those two guys. But, you know, other teams haven't really been able to figure it out in the playoffs. So, you know, if you can't figure out a way to rein in one of those guys, then the Chiefs passing game is probably going to have a good day.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting matchup. Like we said at the beginning, a rematch that a lot of people did not want, but I don't think that's going to deter us from watching a really good football game. Just because it's a matchup you didn't want, it's not like, oh God, it's the Jets versus the, you know, the Cowboys or something like that. It's, you know, it's a very good matchup. Two teams with a lot of history, a very good roster, is pretty evenly matched. This is probably the most even matchup we could have gotten in the Super Bowl. I think maybe one that's a touch more even would probably be maybe Baltimore versus San Francisco, but even that didn't prove to be true on Christmas Day. But I think this is going to be interesting. Last question I have for you is actually two. What is going to be the coin flip, and what color Gatorade are we going to say?
I think when they beat the 49ers the first time, was it yellow? I feel like it was yellow. Well, you know, they're going back to the same uniforms they had when they beat them. And, you know, if I'm predicting the Chiefs to win, I'm going to say yellow again. They're going to pull that off. The end zone is yellow there. I know every time they're in the Super Bowl, the Chiefs do the yellow end zone, which is kind of ugly. So I'm going to say the yellow Gatorade gets it done. The coin flip. Well, I'll say the 49ers win the coin flip. I'll give them that.
Okay.
And by the way, if they do, I'm coming out and taking the ball. I don't care. I know they probably won't. But like, this is another one of those games where I think you've got it. You cannot let the Chiefs steal the momentum. I already explained it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's going to be very important to not let the game slip away. If you can go out, I know Kyle Shanahan's got a great scripted drive, you know, because he always does to start the game. If you can go out and put points on the board, I think you're in much better shape. So if they do that, I would prefer taking the ball. I'm not sure they will, but that's what I would do. So 49ers win the coin toss, but the Chiefs win the game, and the Gatorade is yellow. What do you think?
I'm going to say whoever has tails is going to win. Tails never fails. And I'm going to go outside the box with the Gatorade choice, because a couple of years ago or last year that First off, they didn't show the Gatorade dump. Remember, I know that it was a huge thing on Twitter where it was like, my God, what was the color of the Gatorade? It was, and I think it was like blue. It wasn't even a color that like anyone bet on. It was like less than 1% of the people bet it was going to be blue. I think we're going to go a completely different route. We're going to go with a color that no one would even imagine. We're going to go with the white cherry Gatorade. We're going to go with that.
It's a neutral color. You know, it's different than like if, you know, the Chiefs dump purple.
Yeah, it's a neutral gonna be color. White. It's gonna be that. I don't know. I mean, okay. I just like to think outside the box. But yeah, that would be hilarious. Imagine it's like a couple years ago they did it to us where it was blue. No one bet on blue, and then it's like no one's gonna bet on white. I might slam a couple smackers on white just because.
I haven't even looked at the over under for the anthem. But what do we think? Over under. I have no idea what the number is. This is like a pure.
Usually it's like 4 minutes, right? That's like the number. I'm going to say.
That seems a little high. Isn't it close
to? Yeah, well, wasn't it like Aretha Franklin on Thanksgiving?
Oh, yeah, well, that's different. Although you know, Reba's doing it, and she's a little older. So
hold on. Oh, Reba McEntire is doing it. That's right.
Yeah, she's on the older end. So
hold on. Let me just see something. Hold on. National.
You know, people are like studying her past anthems, if there are any.
Dude, this is why I don't bet anymore, because this is just like it gets ridiculous after a while. It does. Hold on, I'm looking it up. Before we depart, I have to look up some of these crazy. Wow, that's short. National anthem over under 90.5 seconds.
Yeah, that is short.
Okay, wait, this is great. They have reasons for it. It says national anthem over 90.5 seconds plus 102. Only one Super Bowl performer since 1999 has performed the anthem in under 91 seconds, being Billy Joel in 90 seconds flat. Let's not put too much stock in Reba McEntire's 1997 World Series performance, 83 seconds. The 68-year-old singer will never perform on a stage like this again. What? Why did that last sentence have to be put in there? What the hell? Coin toss, plus 100. Tails has won 7 of the past 10 Super Bowl tosses. Momentum is on its side. Okay. This is one, too. First touchdown score, jersey number of the first touchdown score over 22.5.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Yeah, like, can't we just bet the player? Why that's a little extreme.
Let's see, where's the color of the Gatorade? I know.
What is McCaffrey? 23, 24? Which one?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Jake Moody misses field goal plus 250.
Oh, I'm taking that. Yep.
Yeah, I'm gonna hammer that.
Yeah, I gotta find that one.
Wait, this gets better. Hold on. This gets so much better. This is like the like random ones. Lil Jon will appear with Usher at the halftime show, minus 200. Winning scorer of the Puppy Bowl, Bark Purdy, is plus 3,300.
Put it all on Bark Purdy.
Bark Purdy. Total time, Taylor Swift will be shown live over 28.5 seconds. Will Kelsey and Taylor Swift be shown kissing on the field? Okay. Wait, I just want to see, what is the Gatorade color? I want to see the Gatorade. Of course, this one has everything else but the Gatorade color. Let's see. Oh, I'm hammering this. First touchdown scorer, Noah Gray, plus 5,500.
You know Andy Reid's going to have something weird dialed up.
Yeah. Or it could just be.
By the way, apparently the biggest liability for sports books, because a lot of people bet it earlier in the year, would be a Sam Darnold Super Bowl MVP. Because a lot of people were like, well, you know, the 49ers, I don't believe in Brock Purdy. The 49ers are a well-oiled machine. If Purdy gets hurt, Sam Darnold could lead them to a Super Bowl and win. So keep an eye out for that. Maybe, Purdy goes down, Sam Darnold comes in, wins Super Bowl MVP.
All right, here we go. So we got purple as the opening odd favorite at plus 225. Blue has made an appearance at 275. Yellow, green, lime. I didn't know lime was a color. Is plus 450.
Wait. Is lime the same as green or yellow?
I guess. I don't know. That's weird. No, there is a cucumber lime Gatorade that is a different color than the other two. Green is like sour apple or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yes, my Gatorade knowledge is extensive, I know.
Yeah, it's better than mine.
Orange is plus 550. Red or pink? Pink is the strawberry one. Ugh. Is plus 450. Clear Gatorade, yes! The white Gatorade makes an appearance. Or it's clear Gatorade slash water. Plus 1,000. And then no Gatorade bath at all is plus 4,000.
The water one is, who's dumping water on the
coach? Yeah, like what losers? Like, yeah, imagine being like, the sugar content in Gatorade is too high. Let's just drink water with some electrolytes in it. Like, get out of here. Nerd. All right. I'm glad that we kind of talked a little bit about that. That was something that I wanted to mention but kind of forgot about. But I'm glad that we looked at some of those quirky props. There,
you know, there are a million of those. So bizarre. I got to look at Jake Moody missing a field goal. That's, I've got a good feeling about that one.
I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to put $1 bet and bet every single prop in the Super Bowl.
You should. I think a lot of people do that. Like they have sheets where you could see all whatever 100.
It's going to be like $1 for like 700 million or something like that. It's going to be like some ridiculous number. Who knows? Maybe I'll be able to buy us a podcast studio in a neutral site.
All because of the Gatorade.
That's right. All right, ladies and gentlemen. This has been episode 55. This was the Super Bowl preview, which, of course, got sprinkled into a couple other random side notes. But that's what we do over here at the ASN Podcast. And I know that I speak for Dan myself here when I say that I hope you guys enjoy the Super Bowl. I hope you guys win all your Super Bowl bets. Do not drink and drive, and do not overeat. Thank you guys so much for watching. I hope you enjoyed.